chickens can't mix with the pigs or something like that?
No, for the most part, they all get along.
Use Ozzie Harding. Yeah! Here I am, your main man, reporting from Jam Jam. On 16,000 kilocycles FM, and 1,000 megahertz on the ground. Yeah!
My name is Kevin Van Hentenrick of the Hunter Stone Carving Seminar, and you are listening to WGXC Accra 90.7 FM.
You see Lion, the King of Beasts.
Music from elsewhere and beyond.
Huge elephant trumpet across the plains.
Imaginary soundtracks to unmade foreign films.
And there are rhino, those craggy creatures surviving from a bygone age.
Snack Point Charlie, hosted by Jeff Economy. Every first Wednesday from 10 p.m. to midnight on WGXC 90.7 FM, WGXC.org.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by the First Presbyterian Church of Hudson, a faith community open to all. Whether you are single, married, divorced, gay, wealthy, poor, or no habla inglés, if you are just browsing, just woke up, or just got out of jail, it doesn't matter if you work on Wall Street or if you sleep on Wall Street, you belong. We love soccer moms, crying babies, vegans, hipsters, seekers and doubters, tourists and locals. All are welcome. Services held Sunday mornings at 10:45 a.m. You can find us on the web at firstpreshudson.org.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Lynn Sloniker of Hudson, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
WGXC 90.7 FM, Accra, Catskill, Hudson, New York 90.7 FM. Listeners reported. It's radio for open ears, open heart, open hands, and open mind. We give thanks again to you for supporting WGXC all through the years, and then I hope that you stay with us.
Welcome to a myriad of musings and music with the ninth grade of BCD. Today is our first live show. Enjoy.
Thank you. So that was Spring from Vivaldi's Four Seasons. These were probably his most famous pieces. They were they're all violin concertos, and they're pretty revolutionary for his time. He used these pieces to express the images that one could feel in spring or in winter or in any of the seasons. And so that was pretty revolutionary for his time. Yes. A 9-year coach of the men's. So today we are going to be interviewing John Evans, who is the president of Hot Football. He is the former school psychologist of BCD, and he is a 9-year coach of the men's soccer team in Westfield, Massachusetts. So our first question is, what is Hot Football? Can you tell us a little bit about it?
Sure, and thanks for having me.
Yeah.
Hot Football, HOTFUTBOL, football being the world's most popular game, beloved in Haiti and most of the world, known to us as soccer. But the HOT in front of Hot Football is actually an acronym, and it stands for Health, Opportunity, and Training. And a number of years ago, we decided to change our name. We had a Creole name for Hot Football prior to calling it that, and the our original name was Konbit Football Haiti, or Coming Together for Soccer in Haiti. But we had to translate that so many times into English that we decided that in a board retreat, we would change that to Hot Football. Easier. Uh-huh.
And all the, like, why did you choose Haiti? What, is there something significant about it, or?
There is. Haiti is the poorest country in the Western Hemisphere. It is a country born of slavery in 1492 when of all people, Christopher Columbus landed there, got word back to Queen Isabella and Ferdinand that there was a beautiful country and lots of people that could ship her resources to Europe. And thus started 300 years of slavery, followed by a 10-year revolution and eventually the overthrow of the French, who were the masters of the slaves in Haiti. So we're working with a country, a number of people who have risen out of oppression and to become a democracy and have endured poverty and difficulty since.
Sure. So you've already talked about what the program is. Can you tell us a little about the history, your journey with working with Hot Football, and really the journey to start the program?
Sure. A former BCD student, Nick Whalen, became a photojournalist and traveled down to Haiti and was taking pictures of the gang wars between the United Nations forces and the gangs in Cité Soleil. As he traveled down there, he and I stayed in touch with each other, and he came home and asked me if I wanted to go grab a cup of coffee. And doing so, I sat down with him, and in the midst of a cup of coffee, he said, you know, I see tons of kids playing soccer in the streets down there. They're playing barefoot. They roll up T-shirts and wrap them in twine to use for a ball. And they use cinder blocks for goals. Everybody loves to play. They're passionate about it. Would you like to come down and run a soccer camp? And without hesitation, I said, sure. Mm-hmm. And that was the start of it. And I also used these words with Nick. I said, you know me well enough to know, in for a penny, in for a pound. I called the guys I went to college with, about 80 guys. And in 2 weeks, they came up with $10,000, soccer equipment, airplane tickets, and myself and my former college roommate were on a plane down to Haiti in June of 2007.
How was the program grown from where it was initially? Sort of like a small, I'm assuming a small field.
When I first arrived there, I put a soccer ball down on the field, and a few minutes later, there were about 50 kids. I made an announcement that tomorrow we're going to have a soccer camp that will last a week, using my rudimentary French because I didn't know anything about Creole. And the next morning there were 120 kids. Oh, and the passion for the game is so great down there that even a small postage stamp field will fit as many kids as possible, and any opportunity to play is a good opportunity. So the opportunity to teach kids more about the game was, it was fresh, it was available, and we went for it.
So this program, it obviously started a couple years ago. Have any of the original participants come back to help with your organization, or like, I'm assuming you've sort of watched them grow up. Like, what has that been like?
Very interestingly, three of the original guys that we trained in Jacque, which is a small section of Port-au-Prince, became coaches. And over time, using the money that they earned as coaches, one of them has become an engineer, one of them has become a school teacher, and one of them drives bigwigs around for CARE, the NGO CARE down in Haiti. All three are now married with children. They no longer work for the program, but the many of the kids who originated in the program have become coaches working for our program and other programs as well.
What are the main initiatives of the program in general, and more specifically, what are the initiatives for the children that go through the program? What do you, I mean, I know it's mainly, well, not mainly, but for soccer camp, but you also mentioned the HOT with abbreviation. So I know I've actually watched a video, and you're introducing food with an aid as well. So it's more of a community builder program for Port-au-Prince and Haiti in general.
That's correct. First of all, let's talk about the kids. The kids are from 6 to 17 years old, boys and girls. And traditionally, girls don't get involved in sports in Haiti. So it took a while to build the trust with the community for moms and dads to allow the girls to come to the park and become part of the sports program. That was an accomplishment by itself. Every child in the program is required to be enrolled in school, passing all their courses, and attending every day. They show us their report cards. We look at their attendance. If a kid's not going to school, we say, you got to get to school, pass your courses, and then you can come back into the program. We have a partner. We are a sectarian program. In other words, we're not allied with any religious affiliation or anything like that. But we have a partner called Feed My Starving Children. It's a Christian group, and they have done food programs all over the world. They store one of their containers on our field, and using the food from their container, which is part of the compensation for the storage there, we've been able to open a feeding program for the kids in the program, so they get at least one good, hot, fresh meal a day when they're there for practice, which is 5 days a week. Also, when we have a doctor on staff, a psychologist on staff, social worker, kids are learning English. They do community leadership programming, learn how to be a member of a team. So it's all about supporting the organization and development of the community.
So did you, when you first created the program, when you created it, did you think that this would become as big and as powerful? Not necessarily powerful, but thinking it would not only be a soccer camp, but also an organization that helps the community?
Yeah, that's a great question. There's an old saying that the work comes out of the work. The more work you do, the more work emerges, and the work gets richer as time goes on. When we had that first soccer camp and came home from it, we saw the potential for what we could possibly do. And for a number of years, we got bigger and spread out and got all over Haiti, coached a couple hundred, taught a couple hundred coaches how to coach, started going to different cities, started being all over the place working with different programs. And we noticed that our mission started to drift. Mission drift can kill an organization. Mm-hmm. And so one of the things we did was we, after the earthquake in Haiti in 2010, we got very local and started taking care of a couple of hundred kids in a very specific community. And that consolidation really helped us to develop to the point where we are now.
So how does coaching kids in Haiti for you compare to how you coach kids in Westfield? Is it like, how does it compare?
In Westfield, I'm coaching college students, so they're a bit older. Developmentally, yeah. They've been in the game a bit longer. But the game is the game everywhere. Mm-hmm. So what you notice is that, well, here's a little difference. The kids in Haiti are playing in small spaces because they play in an urban setting. So if you're playing in a street no wider than this room, your vision of the field is marked by 5 to 10 yards. So a lot of your vision is down at your feet and the feet of the people around you. So what I notice about Haitian players is that they're very good at their feet. Mm-hmm. But when they lift their heads up, they don't see their targets far away easily because they haven't been trained to do it. So for the first couple of years, a lot of the work that we did included the words levé tête, or raise your head, pick your chin up, and look at what else is happening on the field. Mm-hmm. Now I would say there's very little difference. The kids technically, tactically, physically are the same kinds of players. We did notice, and in one very important distinction, is that in the beginning, children were weak. They were more physically fragile, and it wasn't until we included food, water, better health care, that the quality of their training and the quality of their game improved.
So how often do you go down to Haiti? And, like, do you go there every year, or how often?
I try to get down there, let's say, at least 3 times a year. Nice. I was down there in June. Mm-hmm. We just opened a basketball court. We lease a small park in inner city Port-au-Prince, which is the capital of Haiti.
Yep.
And Parc Ismaree, which is the space that we rent. At Parc Ismaree, we just built a brand new basketball court. Mm-hmm. The basketball court I went down and dedicated in June. Now that court is open. It's being played on every day. There's a soccer field in the park, and green space for people to move around, and a garden that provides food for the meals that we serve.
Mm-hmm. And who was that park dedicated to, and is there something significant about that?
Nora, thank you for asking that question. The park is dedicated to, it's actually named after a guy named Antoine Ismaree. Antoine Ismaree was a progressive businessman, half Palestinian, half Haitian, over several generations in Haiti. And as a wealthy businessman, he backed a president financially. He backed Jean-Bertrand Aristide. When Aristide became president, he upset many people who did not like the idea of free and fair elections. And he was exiled at one point to the United States. Mm-hmm. Antoine's brother was assassinated by the same people that opposed Aristide. And a couple years after that assassination, maybe about 5 years after that assassination, Antoine went to a memorial mass at the main church downtown for his brother, and was taken out on the steps of the church by a death squad and executed. He had owned the space that the park is in, and had dedicated the park and that space to the poor children in the neighborhood. So when we picked up the park, we dedicated our work to the continuing values of Antoine Ismaree.
And does that, through your work, is there an do you educate children about his work? Is it known or is it just a name to the children?
No, it's way more than just a name to the children. A guy like Antoine Ismarie to the kids there would be like a person like Martin Luther King to us here, or somebody that gave their life in the civil rights movement here. Antoine is significant to the kids in the neighborhood that way. Great question.
I guess following Antoine's words, and do you think statistically, with you have this program 5 days a week, that it's improved, I would say, opportunity through younger children, because I see that you can go more in life. You can go in soccer, and you said the three alumni that are happily married and have careers, got careers out of this program. Do you think it's helped or taught children?
Yes, and the opportunities go way beyond that. If you think about, and let's focus on girls for a moment. If you think about 13, 14-year-old girls and the fact that many girls have their first child at 13, 14, 15 years old and have had no sex education, no awareness of pregnancy prevention, nothing like that. And we then consider that in a program like ours, we have health classes.
Yep.
We do pregnancy prevention stuff. We help girls get educations and see the value of education rather than jumping right into having a child or developing a family. So the opportunity to move further into a career life and an educational life, particularly for young girls, young boys as well, is very much alive for the kids in the program.
Yeah. So what are one of the challenges of working down here? What are some of the things that's been the most difficult as you're working in Haiti?
Yeah. Glibly, I would say every day is a challenge. I would say that the biggest challenge for us as an organization, and I'll separate it in two pieces. Domestically here in the United States, the biggest challenge to keeping an organization like this, a small grassroots organization going in a place like Haiti, mm-hmm. is raising funds. It's a huge piece. Let's separate that for a moment and look at Haiti itself. Clean water. Having clean water available for children to drink during practice is, we take it for granted here. We fill our water bottle. We get thirsty. We drink it. When I got dehydrated at a practice a number of years ago, some kids ran to the local fountain for me. They brought back water and they said, they said, drink this, but mm-hmm. it came from the local fountain. It could make you sick, but you're also dehydrated. And I made a decision that it was more important that I get hydrated and sick. So I drank a liter of the water, and I was sick for several days. Mm. But the point being that access to clean water is important. Mm-hmm. Access to food, sanitation. The kids down there play in their bare feet until we put shoes on them that come from here. Soccer balls, soccer shirts, shin guards, everything they have down there is equipment that comes from us up here. Training coaches, finding the space to play, which we finally have, improving that space, lighting the space, growing grass or putting turf on that space. Those kinds of things are all challenges.
Have those become more difficult since the hurricane, or how has that changed?
The great question. The country has had a series of natural calamities, hurricanes, earthquakes, all manner of huge storms, political upheavals, etc. Yeah. Each one of those tends to have an impact on the day-to-day functioning of citizens in the country. Mm-hmm. So that, for instance, when the earthquake occurred in 2010, the soccer field that we now use was a tent city holding 2,000 people, a small hospital, a church, a school, and latrines and shelter for a couple thousand. Yeah. So it ceased being a soccer field, which changed our program, which meant that we were transporting people across the city to small pieces of open space to train them. But the kids were still clamoring to play. And then we would come back and sleep in a tent beside the tent city at night. And that's the way that these things, that's the way it goes. And so in dealing with intermittent calamity, one learns resilience, flexibility, and what's called tolerance for ambiguity. When you're in ambiguous circumstances, you have to be very tolerant.
So I know you were just talking about this kind of in your last points, but what is the current state of Haiti?
Great question. Haiti today is in a deeply chaotic state. There is a corrupt governing body at the top of the country. The citizens of the country have gone into a massive 2 to 3 month long protest. Schools are closed. Businesses are closed. Inflation is rampant. Their currency has been devalued. Food and fuel are largely unavailable. Since school is closed, our after-school program can't function as an after-school program because everything has shifted. And the streets, by the way, are packed with people demonstrating every day. There are people light fires, light tires on fire, dig ditches across the road to stop traffic. There are armed gangs. There are all of these kind of things, and it stops commerce. As a result, one of the things we've done is we've acknowledged that Parc Ismaree is a safe, stable, and predictable place for kids and adults to come. So we've kept the park open, and we've shifted to programming from 8 a.m. till noon every day so that the kids in the neighborhood have got a place to go. Mm-hmm. There's a study skills group. Anybody that wants to keep up with their schoolwork can sit with one of the coaches or one of the adults. There's a psychologist there that can meet with people that feel traumatized. There are coaches for teams. There are people working on basketball and soccer. There are kids doing arts and crafts. There's somebody cooking a meal for 80 to 100 kids and adults. And so every day, there's something happening at the park. And what we've done is using that idea of resilience, adaptation, flexibility, and tolerance for ambiguity, we've adjusted the program to meet the conditions of the country the way it's presenting right now. We're hoping conditions change sometime soon. We don't know how long that's going to take. I'm going to try and take a trip down there right after Thanksgiving.
Okay. So, like, how do you hope the program will evolve in the future further? And how do you hope it? What do you hope it will become even farther along?
Another great question. The folks that own Parc Ismaree, and of course its name would never change, the folks that own Parc Ismaree have asked us if we'd like to purchase it. Mm-hmm. They've given us a price. We have said, yes, indeed, we'd like to purchase the park. Yep. Once we purchase the park, we think that we can build a sustainable program model so that if we turf the soccer field, and these are sort of the dreams we have, if we put artificial turf on the soccer field, teams from all over the city, and we already know this is true, teams from around the city will want to come and rent the field to practice and to play games. Teams already come and rent the basketball court to practice and play games and tournaments. The money that comes in from those things can support the program, pay the coaches, and will rely less on contributions from outside the country to get the work done.
Yeah. So what can we do as individuals and as a community to kind of help with this and help with what the situation in Haiti and just help with your organization?
It's a great question. The first thing I'll say is go to hotfootball.org and look at what we're doing. Take a look at the work that goes on down there. There is a section, how can I help? or how can I volunteer? Take a look at that. I know that traditionally we look at collecting soccer balls, soccer shoes, shirts, shorts, shin guards, things like that. More important than anything else is the funding to keep a program like ours alive and moving. Yeah. Interestingly enough, a program like ours costs about $60,000 a year to run, which means that we've got to raise about $5,000 a month in order to keep doing what we do. All of that comes from the charity of people around here who contribute, sometimes organizations, sometimes individuals. And we try and keep enough in the bank to keep things moving.
Yeah.
So those are a couple of the ways that you can look at helping. One thing you can do is learn about the history of places like Haiti. Learn about the culture. It's a place that is 150 miles from Florida. And most people in the U.S. are unaware of one of the most dramatic histories in the history of the civilized world. And that is a people going from being entirely enslaved to being in charge of their own republic in 10 years. Never doubt the power of a people who have been oppressed and have found their freedom.
So thank you very much for coming on our show today. We really appreciated having you and learning more about Hot Football and all the work that you do in Haiti.
Well, and for all you guys do here from the kids in our program, thank you very much. And they would say, merci en pile.
So that was today's interview with John Evans. And now we're going to transition over to our current event segment. And we are going to start with Lana.
Here's the latest on the presidential race. Kamala Harris, the California senator, has dropped out. Following fellow Democratic candidate Beto O'Rourke, Harris announced her campaign end on Tuesday, the 3rd of December. According to the New York Times, this came after months of low polling numbers and crucial mistakes that evidentially decreased her bid. She still is a strong candidate for the Democratic Party, making history and breaking race and gender barriers by being the first African-American woman to run for president. In her announcement, she told her supporters, quote, "My campaign for president simply doesn't have the financial resources we need to continue. But I want to be clear with you, I am still very much in this fight," end quote. Overall, she struggled with finances and, according to the New York Times, struggled in stating her personal plans and policies for debatable issues such as healthcare and her own career as a prosecutor. But spectators believe that she is still a viable candidate slash option for the position of vice president for her fellow runners. Her withdrawal has decreased the wide range of diversity in the race. Overall, she provided intellectual and genuine perspectives of justice, equality, and fair policies for the United States of America. On another note, it is becoming clearer which candidate is to qualify and continue ahead in the race for the Democratic nominee. Joe Biden, Elizabeth Warren, Bernie Sanders, Amy Klobuchar, Pete Buttigieg, and Tom Steyer have qualified for the next week so far. As the months go by, the race is becoming more and more challenging to qualify, highlighting the forerunners. Tulsi Gabbard and Andrew Yang need one more percentage of polling to qualify. However, Cory Booker does not seem able to qualify for the next debate, even though he attended the one prior. Stay tuned for the next debate on December 19th in Los Angeles, California.
So thank you, Lana, for telling us about the presidential race. Now we are going to go to Eli for impeachment stage part two.
All right. So there has been an advancement in the impeachment process since the last time we covered it on this show. Just yesterday, the Intelligence Committee released a report with the findings of their investigation. The report was released to the Judiciary Committee and to the public. Now that the report has been released, the Judiciary Committee will review the findings and decide whether to continue with the impeachment process or not. If they decide to continue, not to continue, the process will end. If they decide to continue the proceedings, then they will draft articles of impeachment. If the Judiciary Committee decides to write up the articles of impeachment, then the impeachment will move on to the next step, in which the full House of Representatives votes on each article of impeachment individually. If the vote is yes on any of the articles, then the president is impeached.
Great. Thank you so much, Eli, for that. It was great. So now we are going to transition over to Nora for our final current event. And so I'll turn it over to Nora. Nora?
So the Iraqi Prime Minister Adel Abdul Mahdi announced his resignation after nearly 2 months of anti-government protests. In a statement, Adel Mahdi said he would submit his resignation to Parliament so that they could consider their options. He has called on the government to, quote, act in the best interests of Iraq, preserve the blood of its people, and to avoid slipping into a cycle of violence, chaos, and devastation. The news of Abdul Mahdi's resignation comes just days after the Iranian consulate in the city of Na'arif was attacked and Mahdi ordered an investigation into the deaths of at least 31 people. In total, around 380 people have been killed and more than 17,745 have been injured in Iraq since the protests have begun, according to a member of the Independent High Commission for Human Rights of Iraq. The protesters have demanded that the government step down and hold elections under the supervision of the United Nations. The government officials have imposed strict curfews, internet blackouts, in addition to lethal force in an attempt to control the protests. In addition to this, in Jordan, 13 Pakistani nationals died in a fire at a farm in Jordan, the Civil Defense Department of Pakistan has said. The fire engulfed the corrugated iron sheds housing the laborers at a farm in the South Shwana, a rural area west of the Jordanian capital, Amman, early on Monday. The 13 dead include 8 children and 4 women. The Prime Minister Omar al-Razaz expressed his condolences to the people and called on the government of Pakistan to open an expedited investigation into the incident. And that is all for current events.
Great. Thank you so much. So now we're going to a music segment, and I hope you enjoy.
Okay, so our first song today was suggested by our guest, John Evans, and it is about Haiti, and it is in Creole by his son, Ian.
Mes amis, ça c'est ti blan pov kap wet nan foye ya. Si ou pa konem, konya ou konem. Oh, moun pa viv nan kay ankor. Se nan Facebook, Instagram yo habite. 2019, se salye. Anale. Fam pa fam ankor, se sel kon yo e. Yo pa nan program, se sou live yo e. E yo pa kontan. Si life pa partage, y'a pas produit, pendant y'a pouye, qui les nous vin comme ça, la vie n'a pas oublié, Jésus a pantré tard, mes amis gardés, pas gagnant vie privée, facha n'a prémassé, et garçon pi mal, si nous bien gardés, à la chaka mes amis, à la chaka, oui, à la chaka mes amis, à la chaka, oui, à la chaka mes amis, à la chaka. A la chaka, mes amis, a la chaka.
se bel tennis. Yeah. Pa gen yon bon manje, yeah. Ou tande a se yis. Men fam sou live liye, yeah. Ou al bat la ponyet. Se senate ou ye. PHTK ki sou pouvoi, ki sa yapele. Mem kaka anko, ko peyi ap vole. Mes amis sa se ti blan pov ka prete na foe. Ou pral pale mal, ou pral diskite. Ou pral fache pou verite, ti blan ap pataje. A la chaka mes amis, a la chaka. A la chaka mes amis, a la chaka. Amwe, a la chaka mes amis, a la chaka. A la chaka, mes amis, a la chaka. Carnaval pa passe, pa gen l'hôpital. Medam yo a fe wout mal pas pou mette vie sandal. Ziri chako tout kote, ziri peyi ap van troche. Kanal yo ple fatra, le lapli ap tombe. Blan yo pa kone, ki sa ka iti. Mwen kone paske mwen zoti yo se tazini. Lop bod lop pa fe yon met pou Haitien an ba. Si ou pa kwe sa ma pale tan de diaspora. Bil yo trop fok pou travay fok pou peye samba. Sambo job sou ou, manje pen an ma ba. Kone krasem Haiti ka chanje. Di pap menm koute yon bil yon mekop sa biye sere. Yon fwa anko, mwen pral mande. Pou ki sa yon pavle peyi Haiti leve kampe. Kreyo konpran, paske kreyo ma pale. Sa se ti blan pov ka prete nan fore kap de pale. A la chaka, mes ami, a la chaka. A la chaka, mes ami, a la chaka. Amwe, a la chaka, mes ami, a la chaka. A la chaka, mes ami, a la chaka. Sa se ti blan pov ka prete nan fore kap de pale. Rebel. Phenomen, skinny, bomb beat music. Va disparaître, c'est n'a pas et m'a caché. Daniel, tu es beginning. Vibrate up. Yeah, beatmaker, extraordinaire. Mes amis. I don't vibe.
Song on our agenda is L'Esprit de Noël, a Haitian Christmas song.
Good. très longtemps lassé pour Noël. Accoutumé au tout le monde des fidèles. Esprit Noël là, va et toute famille. Musique Noël là, jouer de toute la vie. Magasin.
The next song is Daddy's Home, a classic by Jermaine Jackson.
You're my love, you're my angel, you're the girl of my dreams. I'd like to thank you for waiting patiently, yeah, yeah. Daddy's home, your daddy's home to stay. Yeah, yeah.
drops in your eyes.
Okay, so I just wanted to take a minute quickly and say how glad we are to be live for our, from our studio in BCD for the first time. And it's been a great show. Make sure to tune back to Myriad Musings in Music on the first Wednesday of the month at 7 p.m. So it was great to do our first live show, and now we'll finish off with our last music piece.
Our next song is Chicago by Sufjan Stevens.
Go, drove to Chicago. All things know, we sold our clothes to the state. I don't mind, I made a lot of mistakes.
Hello, this is Cleo, and you're listening to WGXC 90.7 FM Accra. For freedom from myself and from the land. I made a lot of mistakes. I made a lot of mistakes. I made a lot of mistakes. I made a lot.
things go to recreate us. All things grow, all things grow. We had a mindset. All things know, you had to find.